The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. I am beyond excited today to be joined by one of the most respected, knowledgeable, and go-to sources for the truth in nutritional science, Dr. David Katz. We'll be talking about the simple truths about healthy eating and how to separate the simple truths from the many confusing and conflicting messages about a healthy diet. Dr. Katz is the founding director of Yale University's Yale Griffin Prevention Center, immediate past president of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and founder and president of the True Health Initiative. Dr. Katz earned his BA degree from Dartmouth College, his MD from Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and his PhD from Yale University School of Public Health. The recipient of many awards for his contributions to public health, he has received 3 honorary doctorate degrees. Dr. Katz was named one of the nation's top nutrition experts for 2017-2018 by DietSpotlight.com. He holds 5 U.S. patents, with others pending. He invented the research method known as evidence mapping, is a principal inventor of the overall nutritional quality index algorithm, and invented the dietary intake assessment method called diet quality photo navigation. He has authored roughly 200 peer-reviewed publications and many hundreds of health columns, both online and in print. He is recognized globally for expertise in nutrition, weight management, and the prevention of chronic disease, and has a social media following of roughly 900,000 people. David, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Sharon, thanks so much for having me. Lovely intro. And most of it was defensible, with one exception. I got my MPH at Yale, not my PhD, so you upgraded me there. Thank you for that. But it's great to be with you, and I really appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, and David, many of us who are physicians and scientists with an interest in lifestyle medicine, nutrition, and who are council members of the True Health Initiative have read so many of your articles and heard you speak on many occasions, and you have a unique ability to analyze the latest science and walk through the study design and methodology in the context of what we know about the topic in a thoughtful way where you agree or point out the flaws in the headlines. And rather than adding to the confusion about nutritional science, you make knowing what we need to eat for health really simple. So first, I want to thank you for being such a source of reliable information and for the decades of tireless dedication you've had. I mean, your work has really just made such a contribution both to us in healthcare and, of course, to the global cultural epidemic that we're seeing.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I'm glad it looks like tireless effort. I have to confess, I do get tired sometimes, and particularly these days, because I'm so worried. You know, that's the reason for the book. That's the reason for the passion. You know, we're really running out of time to make the critical differences. It's good news and bad. The bad news is public health is in a pretty desperate state. Massive burden of chronic disease getting worse around the world. We've done nothing to fix the obesity pandemic. It's getting worse around the world. And of course, the planet is in the ICU, with climate change and cutting down rainforests and depleting the oxygen in the seas. And, you know, it's a pretty desperate situation. So that's the bad news. The good news is lifestyle medicine holds the keys to both kingdoms. This is really the one area in medicine where the things we do can both advance the human condition, adding years to lives and life to years, and help save the planet. So it's just a luminous promise. And, you know, frankly, I get pretty darn stirred up about it. And thank you. You're right. I mean, what I've tried to do with the science is apply sense. So of course, I'm well trained in science. I've seen patients for 25 years. I'm formally trained in biostatistics and epidemiology. I've written textbooks on those topics and taught courses in them. I've run a clinical research lab for years. So, you know, I basically have paid my dues. So I'm qualified to judge the science. And what I see happening is that science itself is being abused. You know, in our culture, every study comes along as an epiphany, as if it changes everything we knew up until yesterday morning. And science doesn't work that way. You add the new study to everything you knew before, you interpret it in context, you make incremental adjustments as warranted. So we're really abusing science, and to some extent our colleagues are complicit in this if we exaggerate the significance of any one study to try and gain notoriety. But it's really a cultural problem, you know, and you're aware of this as much as I am, Sharon, but the media will turn any provocative study, and especially the ones that disagree with what we thought was true, into a spate of you know, clickbait headlines that will dominate a news cycle. And then we'll get, you know, some study the very next day or the very next news cycle that says the opposite, and the same thing will happen again. And so you've done a disservice twice over. I mean, first you exaggerated the importance of a single study, but then you created the impression that, oh my goodness, the experts keep changing their minds. They don't really know anything, so we'll just all go back to Burger King. And meanwhile, we just keep getting fatter and sicker and doing ever more damage to the planet. The truth about food, diet for health, diet for sustainability, diet for biodiversity, diet so that our children and grandchildren will have something left to eat and water to drink, it really is simple. You know, Michael Pollan got it down to 7 words: eat food, not too much, mostly plants. That's pretty darn good. It's hard to improve on that. It's the lies that are complicated. It's the distortions that are complicated. And so, you know, again, Sharon, thank you for the kind remarks. But the reason that, you know, I've written so many columns and wrote this 200,000-word book is not because the truth about food is in any way complicated. It's because our culture does so much to conspire against it, and we have to confront that.
Yeah, and I've been enjoying reading your book, and for our listeners, the book is The Truth About Food, and it's the culmination of your work to date. And unlike any other book that I've read about nutrition, you walk the reader through how we should ask questions and interpret a study or interpret a headline. And unlike most books, you describe not only how we should eat, but you spend considerable time on the lies as well as the truths. Why is that important?
Well, so I'll get into that. And before I do, I just want to mention, Sharon, I'm honored and proud that you're a member of the Council of Directors of the True Health Initiative. And I want to mention that all proceeds from this book go to support that 501c3 nonprofit. And the whole mission there is to take the science, the sense, and the global consensus about diet and lifestyle and try to make them common knowledge. So that this book was written in the service of that mission. And to advance that mission, it's not good enough to tell people again that, yeah, fruits and vegetables really are good for you. What I was trying to do was immunize people not just against yesterday's silly fad diet, but tomorrow's. And I don't know what tomorrow's is going to be. Nobody knows. It'll be something. I guarantee you that. There will be some new silly diet that comes over the transom tomorrow and the next day and the next and the next. But I don't know yet what that's going to be. How do you immunize against something that is unforeseen and unknown? Well, you do that with true understanding. And that's why I had to devote the whole first section of the book to the lies, the many fallacies, the ways we misinterpret science. For example, you know, I mean, there are books written to tell people to stay away from fruits because they contain fructose or they have a high glycemic index. And there are books telling people don't eat any plant foods because they contain lectins. And books telling people don't eat any grains, even whole grains, because they potentially contain gluten, and on it goes. And those books seem very convincing. So, you know, I'm telling people in my book, none of that's true, that vegetables and fruits and whole grains and beans and lentils and nuts and seeds are the very best foods for you. So how do we reconcile those? Well, you have to explain, well, what's going on? It's extremely easy. It's the easiest thing in the world for a scientist, a physician, a health professional, someone with credentials, to decide before they ever ask the question what the answer needs to be. So I'm going to write a book to tell the world that blank is bad for them. Fill in the blank with fruit or fill in the blank with whole grains. I'm then going to shop the peer-reviewed literature, which is vast, and only look for studies that can be presented to support my argument. Now, what I'm going to know, but I won't tell my readers, is that for every one of those studies I found, there are 100, maybe 1,000, maybe 10,000 that say the opposite, that say that beans and lentils are good for people. I'm kind of telling them about that part. I'm going to cite the one study in 1,000 that supports my point of view. And since my readers aren't people who routinely have recourse to PubMed and the peer-reviewed literature, and I've got letters after my name, they're going to believe me. And besides, I'm telling them something that's provocative and titillating and at odds with everything they thought they knew until yesterday. It's just the sort of thing, you know, that results in the bestseller list. So, you know, I'm golden. Well, that happens again and again and again. And unless you understand how it happens, and so that fallacy would be called cherry picking. Instead of representing the true weight of evidence, you shop the scientific literature for the opinion you already own, and you selectively cite literature. That goes on all the time, Sharon. You know that, I know that. But you know, I don't think the people who buy all these books do know that. So you know, there are innumerable fallacies and misunderstandings like that that allow people to be duped about diet and you know, convince people that there is some new quick fix way to eat that's at odds with everything we thought we knew up until this morning. And so, you know, I really felt like a big part of the mission was not just what I know. Yeah, I know that a diet of minimally processed vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, lentils, nuts, and seeds with less of everything else is the best way to eat. And frankly, I don't care if it's high in fat or low in fat. It could be high in fat like the Mediterranean diet or low in fat like a traditional Asian diet. It doesn't matter. The level of a particular macronutrient is one of the least useful ways to judge the overall quality of a diet. But I know that that basic pattern is the pattern that runs through all of the diets that are associated with good health outcomes, both for people and the planet. It's not enough to say that again. I have to say, how do I know it? How do I read the literature? What am I looking for? What are the fallacies that trip you up? And so, as you say, many pages in this book are devoted to that. I'm kind of, you know, after working in this space for 30 years, I would like everybody to kind of enter the discussion about diet and health at the level of an expert. Here's what we know. Here's how we know it. Here's why we know it. Here's how we tell the difference between what's reliable and not. And then after that, only after that, I get into the details. What's true about coconut oil? What's true about canola oil? What's true about butter? What's true about lectins? What's true about gluten? What's true about chocolate? What's true about protein, carbohydrate, fat? What's true about omega-3, omega-6, saturated fat, and on it goes. So much of the book, as you know, is devoted to those details too. But honestly, that's the easier part of the conversation, knowing how to understand the flow of information about diet and health, which is so predominant in our culture, is a key piece. And I don't think any other book has taken that on. And it took a big book to do it. You know, as you've seen, this book is a whopper. It's 752. and it's, you know, and that's despite the fact that, you know, I joke in the book, you know, if the truth about food were really just the truth about food, you know, I could have done it in Pollan's 7 words. Would have been 7 words and they wouldn't have even been mine. Eat food, not too much, mostly plants. It took 199,993 additional words, though, to explain why and how we know what's true and reliable and what's not.
Yeah, and what I really appreciate is how common sense it really is. I mean, you just say at the beginning, like, if it sounds too good to be true, it is.
You know, it's interesting, Sharon. I'm actually working on a new book with Mark Bittman. In this past year, Mark and I, and Mark, I suspect, is known to many listeners, a very famous food writer and cooking expert with all sorts of fantastic cookbooks, How to Cook Everything, and all of the related books. We did a piece together for New York Magazine. It's actually one of the most read pieces that they ran all year. And theoretically, it was the last conversation about diet and health. And we fielded 200 questions, you know, from really good questions to really silly ones, but we answered them all. And then inevitably, it wasn't the last conversation. Then they did a sequel because more questions came in. But we were speaking recently, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, the subtitle of my book is Why Pandas Eat Bamboo and People Get Bamboozled. And the point that I'm making there is every wild animal on the planet knows what to eat. You know, they live in a native habitat that, you know, grows stuff or you know, where if they're carnivores, where other animals live that are their native diet. And that's what they eat. And, you know, lions don't inadvertently start eating, you know, grass and leaves. They eat the wildebeest, and the wildebeest don't inadvertently start attacking lions. They eat the grasses, and, you know, every wild animal knows what to eat, and pandas eat bamboo, and koalas eat eucalyptus leaves, and dolphins eat fish. So, you know, we were once a kind of wild animal, and we knew what to eat too. You know, we shopped the natural world for foods that sustained us. And over generations, we learned what was safe and what was poisonous and what to prioritize. And we foraged accordingly, and we survived, and here we are. We survived long enough to evolve these great big brains and to develop science. But does it even pass the sniff test that having invented science and devised the randomized control trial, we now know much less than we once knew when we were just wild animals like every other species on the planet? It makes no sense at all. So clearly something is missing in the way we process the science of nutrition, and what's missing is, in fact, sense. So you go back far enough, the only basis to know what was true about diet and health was sense. But now that we have so much science, we need to apply sense to science. And that's what tends to be missing these days. So, you know, essentially there's this abuse of science where every provocative study is presented to us as if it changes everything. Well, that's not how science works. So there's clearly this new age requirement to reintroduce sense into the equation. And, you know, I've said from the start with the True Health Initiative, the mission really is to take the science of healthy living, the sense of healthy living, and the global consensus among experts about healthy living, and turn that confluence into common knowledge. And Sharon, I'm going to ask you a personal question. Do you eat?
Yes, I eat.
Almost every day?
I make it a habit.
Wow. What a remarkable coincidence. Me too, right? So that's the funny thing about this topic, right? So you got all kinds of experts talking about diet all the time. This is not a theoretical conversation. Every expert on nutrition the world over eats, most of us, just about every day. So we actually have to practice some version of what we preach. And so that kind of begs the question, gee, I wish I could be a fly on the wall. I'd love to see what happens when the world's leading nutrition experts get together and have a meal. Well, I've done that. You've probably done it too. I've done it many times in all parts of the world. And here's the thing. And you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to create the True Health Initiative a few years ago was this experience. So I'd be at conferences in whatever part of the world, and there would be leading experts in the Mediterranean diet, and leading experts in the paleo diet, and leading experts in the vegan diet, and leading experts in, you know, everything in between. And it would be time to get food from the buffet table. And the vegans would fill up their plate with, you know, a wide variety of greens. And then they'd make some room for the bean salad or the lentil salad for their protein source. The paleos, you know, it's not like they left the premises and went out to get McDonald's. No, they filled up their plates with the exact same greens. It's just that where the beans or lentils would have gone for the vegans, they went for the grass-fed beef or the wild salmon. But, you know, you look at those two plates and say, wow, you know, real food, minimally processed, you know, in the case of animal food, well-fed, well-exercised, you know, closer to wild animals, and when possible, actually wild animals, so venison or bison or wild salmon. But those two plates are more alike than different, and what's really striking is both of them. So across that spectrum from vegan to paleo, those are more alike than different, and both massively unlike the typical American diet, which is mostly glow-in-the-dark junk food. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could get the world's leading experts on the vegan diet, the paleo diet, and everything in between to come together and say, yeah, actually, we do agree much more than we disagree. We agree about 80 to 90% of everything. It's that last residual 10% where we go our separate ways. And in fact, that's what the True Health Initiative has done. So, you know, with 500 or so world-leading experts from over 40 countries coming together to say we agree. And that's part of the foundational platform of the book, The Truth About Food. These truths are fundamental. They are predicated on a massive science. They are predicated on sense. But they're also predicated on the global consensus of leading experts who actually have to eat almost every day. We are all obligated to make decisions about what do we eat? What do we feed our families? What foods do we share with the people we love? And so, you know, I think that's very telling. You look at what goes on those plates, it tells you something about what is reliably true. And I think that ought to be part of the conversation.
And, you know, the power in that message really is that across these diets, you know, that, you know, whether it's vegan or paleo, they're more alike than different. And that there's more than one way to eat healthy, but that there's a common theme in healthy eating.
Yes, crucial point. And thank you for putting it so concisely. I've been privileged, Sharon, to serve as one of the judges for U.S. News and World Report for the best diet rankings for just about a decade now. So every year for something like the past 10. And, you know, on the one hand, there's something I don't really like about that, and that's, you know, sort of making it seem like there is a new best way to eat every year. But what I do like about it is what you just summarized. So, you know, essentially the diets that come out on top, and I'm just one of, I think, 22 judges. So, you know, I enter my scores and rankings and they get pooled with everybody else's to create the final rankings. But what I do like about it is, you know, the good diets come out on top, the silly diets come out on the bottom. And basically what it's telling the world is, no, actually, there's no massive change year to year. But, you know, we do look at different diets each year as new ones get added, as the public interest shifts. And the fundamentals of eating well can be adapted into a wide array of specific dietary approaches. And that's a beautiful thing because it means you get to make a choice that works for you. You get to pick the diet that works for you and your family. And, you know, I've long spoken about the value proposition of loving food that loves you back. It's a tagline on my wife's recipe site, Cuisinicity, because that's how we've lived. You know, we eat great food in the Katz household. My wife's a brilliant cook. She grew up in southern France, so we had a very Mediterranean-style foundation to our diet and then adapted that. But we really like good food. My wife is a serious foodie, so we wanted to combine the pleasure of good food with the pleasure of good health, and that's always been the commitment there. And by having an array of dietary choices that all honor that same basic theme, of wholesome foods in sensible assemblies, real food, not too much, mostly plants, everybody is empowered to make that kind of choice. So I devote a whole section of the book to discussing the various dietary patterns that conform to the fundamental truths about food. And then I also point out, you know, that there are a lot of elements in pop culture discussion about diet that are completely misleading. There's this notion that saturated fat has been exonerated, that, you know, it's good for us now. Well, you know, that's mostly because people who never read the original studies wrote blogs based on their own opinion, and then other people wrote blogs based on those blogs, and then other people wrote blogs based on the blogs based on the blogs, and I could keep going, you get the idea, right? And then, you know, and then at some point, some physician or dietitian is preparing for a talk, searches the topic online, and says, holy smokes, you know, there are 10,000 websites telling me that saturated fat is good for us now. I must have missed the memo. I guess there must be something there I don't know about. And the next thing you know, they mention it in the talk they give. And then the original bloggers all say, see, even the experts are in on it. And then, you know, it basically never had any validity, but it takes on a life of its own. So I take tales like that and actually trace them all the way back to the original literature, which, by the way, I actually have read because somebody's got to. I mean, that whole narrative is just nonsense. But, you know, most people don't know that. So, you know, so you got to get into the weeds. You got to get into the details. But at a very high level, it's just as you say, there's a basic theme of healthy eating that's very clear and very well established and not negotiable. But then there's a wonderful array of variants on the theme that puts each of us in the driver's seat, makes each of us the cook in our own kitchen, empowers us to choose a diet that we actually can love.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the themes, you know, in a lot of what you write that I think for anyone trying to interpret studies and headlines that I think is, again, so simple and so powerful is, you know, the whole saturated fat controversy, like compared to what, right? So what else are you substituting in your diet in lieu of? And that's really, you know, as you say, when someone says, is this healthy? Well, compared to what?
Exactly. Yeah, no, and it's amazing how routinely that's neglected. So, you know, you'll get a study and you'll get headlines telling you that whole milk is good for you. Okay, yeah, that's because you've studied it against the backdrop of the typical American diet where most kids are routinely drinking Coca-Cola or Pepsi. So the kids drinking milk are probably not drinking Coca-Cola and Pepsi, and all you've really said is that milk is better for kids than Coca-Cola. Well, duh, right? Now, what about if you studied a sample of, you know, children maybe in India on a vegetarian or vegan diet, or maybe children of Seventh-day Adventists in Loma Linda, California, where they're not routinely consuming dairy, but they have an optimal plant-based diet and they're drinking water. Is there still a benefit of adding milk, skim, or whole to that diet? Well, all of a sudden, not so much. Maybe none, maybe some, but it's a totally different question. The instead of what question is absolutely crucial. And, you know, back to the saturated fat story, you know, essentially when Americans reduced our intake of saturated fat, which we only did by a very little bit, we mostly replaced it not with broccoli and lentils, but with low-fat junk food. And so we kind of went from higher saturated fat and a little bit less refined carbohydrate and added sugar to more refined carbohydrate and added sugar and a little bit less saturated fat. That doesn't mean that saturated fat is good for us now. It means there's more than one way to eat badly, and the typical American is committed to exploring them all. And so, you know, again, having a sense of humor, applying sense, and actually doing the hard work of reading the original science are all key elements, I think, in arriving at the fundamental, reliable, truly true truths, if I may say that, about food.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, with 3 decades in this field, I think you can certainly say that, because I think what's lacking is what you said in the very beginning, that everything builds on something else. Yet, I think it takes a certain level of expertise to put any study in the context of the prior studies on that topic.
Yeah. And, you know, I think our attention spans just keep getting shorter, right? So, you know, in this age of the internet and the blogosphere and immediate information gratification, you know, not only does every study get converted into headlines, but the news cycles come along, you know, almost every 20 seconds. So we're really being conditioned to think that we should expect a new version of the truth multiple times a day. And what that means is we're being conditioned to be science illiterate. Which we do at our peril, because, you know, science is the greatest means ever devised to answer hard questions, to understand what's true. So, you know, I revere good quality science. I'm very interested in all the studies that come along, but the way science works is making incremental contributions to the evolution of understanding. And, you know, again, I don't think everybody who wants to eat well is obligated to become a scientist. But I think everybody who really wants to eat well, in spite of this massive misinformation, a lot of it for profit, by the way, a lot of it serving the interests of big food, which makes money by making us fat and sick, and big pharma, which makes money by treating diseases we never needed to get in the first place. We are obligated to have a good entry level understanding of how to make sense of it all. And that's where I think this book can come in.
And, you know, the message that I think you do such a great job promoting is that, you know, amid all this confusion, I think a lot of people feel that we need more science to know what we need to eat for health and what our bodies need. And your message of we know enough to eat healthy today. We don't need to wait for the perfect study that cannot really exist in a lot of nutritional epidemiology.
So, yeah, and this would be a good place to close out the conversation, Sharon, by going back to the very beginning of my career. So I trained first in internal medicine, then preventive medicine, and I completed my preventive medicine training in 1993, 25 years ago. That quarter century ago, a paper came out in the Journal of the American Medical Association entitled Actual Causes of Death in the United States, and it really shaped the trajectory of my career, because essentially that paper enumerated 10 modifiable factors which collectively accounted for virtually all of the premature deaths and chronic disease in the U.S. every year. And that list hasn't really changed very much over the years. And the first 3 things all by themselves accounted for 80%, and they were tobacco, poor diet, and lack of physical activity. And all that's really changed in the 25 years since is that tobacco's influence has gone down because fewer people have smoked now. while the influence of poor diet has gone up and become the number one cause of premature death and chronic disease. But the important thing to note here is we knew enough about the difference between bad diet and good diet 25 years ago to eliminate 80% of chronic disease and premature death. Does it really make sense to bicker endlessly about the details we don't know while doing nearly nothing with what we do know when it by itself is enough to eliminate 80% of chronic disease and premature death in the world around us? Clearly not. Clearly, a huge part of the mission has to be translating what we know, what we have long known, into what we routinely do. I absolutely do favor ongoing research to answer the questions that haven't been answered yet. But for heaven's sake, let's make good use of the information we do have.
And David, I know you're so passionate about this message and about the future generation and the health, you know, nationally and globally. You're just a force of nature and an inspiration to people looking for truth and simplicity. So I want to thank you again for all the work that you do. And for our listeners, if there's one book that you want to leave you armed with knowledge about eating healthy from a true expert in this field, The Truth About Food would be that book.
Well, Sharon, your words are so kind and greatly appreciated. Thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with me.
Thank you.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website, emoryhealthcare.org/livewell. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.